Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine, part two of our weekly Q&A with Layla. So let's go directly to questions. What's next, Layla?
I've got a question. Someone emailed. She says, I'm a woman, light-skinned, in her 60s, recently diagnosed with vitiligo on the lower legs. The doctor prescribed a mild steroid cream and suggested I have my thyroid antibodies checked because vitiligo and thyroid imbalances sometimes go hand in hand, although one getting better or worse doesn't seem to affect the other. My question is, are there any effective natural immune modulators, creams, or herbal treatments? If you go on the internet, there's a plethora of remedies doctors won't tell you about, ranging from Ayurvedic herbs to hypnosis. Also, what are the chances of it spreading or going away at my age, and is this condition sun-related? Thanks so much.
So, it's interesting that this doctor is astute enough to say, hey, you know, you have vitiligo, so let's check for these other conditions, because vitiligo is an autoimmune condition that is highly associated with autoimmune thyroiditis or Hashimoto's thyroiditis. So it's highly associated with hypothyroidism, sometimes hyperthyroidism, but sick thyroid in general. But also, I would go further. I would check for a B12 deficiency because it's highly associated with pernicious anemia.
Really?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And there are ways to check for that. You check for B12 levels, but you also check for anti-parietal cell antibodies, which are a measure of the body's immune reaction to the cells that make intrinsic factor that helps absorb B12. So that's worth checking. Taking B12 will not make the vitiligo go away. However, taking thyroid will not make the vitiligo go away. The other thing I would definitely check for is gluten sensitivity.
Absolutely.
Because that's a trigger for many autoimmune problems.
Yeah, gluten as well as dairy.
Yeah.
I would even go so far as to check her for celiac disease.
Yeah, sure.
Not. Sure.
Yeah.
We've had patients with vitiligo who've done very well on a gluten-free, casein-free diet or a candida-type diet.
Mm-hmm.
There's some association with candida, would you say?
Absolutely, because there's some research that shows that what triggers celiac disease or what triggers gluten sensitivity, why do so many people have it now? Well, candida is something that hypes up the immune cells in the gastrointestinal tract. It lives in the gastrointestinal tract. The body is not happy with the candida. It causes a
leaky gut.
It causes an inflammatory reaction, and that may set the stage for celiac disease or gluten sensitivity. So that's part of it. There's now some research that suggests that GMOs, genetically modified foods, may trigger celiac or gluten sensitivity because glyphosate, which is the active toxin
in Roundup,
is something that can provoke a gastrointestinal autoimmune reaction. So anyway, so you know, we're going a little far afield from vitiligo. Is there like a magic supplement or pill that people can take for it? You know, I had an interesting experience recently. Somebody told me that their dog had vitiligo. I guess dogs can get vitiligo, white patches. And so the vet said, oh, I know what to do for that. Go out and buy a bottle of melatonin, and melatonin will make the white patches go away. Well, I said to this person, you know, your vet is confused, because melanin is the pigment in the skin.
Yes.
And you could take melatonin till the cows come home. And if
and
you're
sleep
a white person, you're not going to turn into, you know, a dark-skinned person. You will sleep better. You'll have better immunity. But your skin's not going to change because melatonin and melanin, although related compounds, melatonin does not make melanin. So that's not the way to do it. Tyrosine is a building block for melanin, so I guess you could maybe supplement tyrosine, make sure there's adequate levels of tyrosine. However, the problem is not with the supply of the building blocks, it's with the cells that make melanin, and they tend to get killed off. These are pigment-producing skins, melanocytes they're called, and they are the targets of the autoimmune reaction. When they get killed off, then you lose the pigmentation in your skin. So you could take a lot of vitamins and supplements, but with the cells that make the melanin are essentially gone.
Yeah.
So, you know,
the thing is to modulate the immune system
exactly.
to keep from attacking
exactly.
the melanocytes.
So a strategy I would use in someone with vitiligo is general autoimmune protocol, which we do a lot. We have patients mm-hmm. with lupus. We have patients with scleroderma. We have patients with rheumatoid arthritis, many autoimmune conditions that we see, autoimmune thyroiditis. And that is like a paleo kind of diet.
Paleolithic diet, or at the very least, gluten-free, dairy-free, removal of any allergies, food sensitivities, maybe also the removal of nightshades, tomatoes, white potatoes, peppers, eggplant, tobacco is a nightshade. People don't know.
Vitamin D is very nice for autoimmune conditions,
yes.
so it could put the brakes on an autoimmune condition.
Yeah.
We'd have to check and make sure vitamin D is adequate. Often it's not. Fish oil may slow the progression of an autoimmune
mm-hmm.
condition.
DHEA.
DHEA may help with mm-hmm. an autoimmune condition.
Modulcare,
which is a sterinol compound. It's made by the same people who make kaolic aged garlic extract. The
mm-hmm.
Wakanaga people make that product, Modulcare. And in addition, I would consider low-dose naltrexone or
yes.
LDN. That is a prescription medication that is actually, in its normal form, it's used for addicts to make them crave drugs less.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I had a patient come in and say, I'm taking this low-dose naltrexone. It's making me feel like an addict. Every time I fill a prescription, they look at me funny. But, no, we use a low-dose. And what it does is it is a gentle immune modulator. It's been used since the era of the AIDS epidemic to enhance immunity or modulate immunity. We don't want to like – that's why that Modulcare is called
yeah.
Modulcare. It modulates
yeah.
immunity. It doesn't enhance
yeah.
immunity.
The thing about low-dose naltrexone, I almost want to call it a wonder drug. And really part of how it works anyway is you take it at night, and that increases the level of endorphin. Endorphin is very, very – critical for modulating immune function. So it's just fascinating how well people are doing with low-dose naltrexone.
Yeah, I would look at it as sort of an adaptogenic compound for the immune system. Adaptogenic compounds tend to enhance where enhancement is needed and control or suppress where suppression is desirable. So it can go either way. We'll want to sometimes enhance the immunity of a cancer patient with low-dose naltrexone, or we'll want to modulate the immunity of a patient with something like ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease or any kind of autoimmune condition. Psoriasis we use it for, too. Multiple sclerosis, big time.
Mm-hmm.
We absolutely
mm-hmm.
use a lot of that for multiple sclerosis. And, you know, the research on it is limited, but preliminary research shows that it's helpful for Crohn's disease. I think a study is underway in multiple sclerosis. And there's a lot of doctors prescribing it, and I think it's virtually harmless.
Yeah.
There's virtually no side effects. Occasionally people get nightmares when they first take it. They get used to it, and then it's fine.
I have a patient who's a pilot with Crohn's disease, and
oh.
he can't take LDN.
Because he's a
pilot. He's not allowed.
Oh, because it could...
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. It should not show up in a drug test, but
yeah.
who knows? It would look funny if he had a prescription for that, because
right.
it would then seem like he was dealing with a drug addiction.
Mm-hmm.
So I get it. It's more for, you know, FAA purposes that he's supposed
yeah.
to fly clean and with no hint of any kind of drug problem.
Anyway, he's doing very, very well just following the diet. And the total elimination of dairy in addition really put him in remission. So
great.
We're thrilled to death.
That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. By the way, just to explain what that's about is I see patients, and then we see patients in tandem, Layla and I, but there's a pathway at the Hoffman Center where patients who already have physicians or who just want the nutritional component can see Layla, and that's a great pathway because then, you know, they don't have to go through extensive and sometimes expensive testing, and they still get the proper nutritional guidance that can help their condition. So check it out. There's information at HoffmanCenter.com on that. All right. Next question.
Next question we have from Phyllis. Hello. I always used to listen to Dr. Hoffman, but lately, since retiring early, I haven't been able to listen to him as much. Get some sleep. That's
I don't
good.
Get that. Oh, I don't. In other words, she's retiring early.
Yeah.
But, you know, guess what?
She's getting her Z's.
But my program is only temporarily on Sunday nights.
Yeah.
And so we will be back on the air at our usual time from 1 to 2 p.m. on Saturdays.
Yeah.
So unless you're sleeping during the daytime, you're nocturnal, you should be able to hear it. Anyway, go ahead.
Anyway, Phyllis writes, my sister is sick with a blood disease called ITP.
Yeah.
She needs to find help and a good diet. Any ideas? She lives in Florida.
Okay, everything we said about autoimmune diet pertains to ITP because it's idiopathic thrombocytopenic purpura, and it's thought to be autoimmune. Idiopathic means we don't know what causes it, but we know it is autoimmune.
Mm-hmm.
So it means that the platelets, in this case, are being destroyed. You know, when it comes to autoimmunity, I can't think of a part of the body that is not affected by autoimmunity.
Honestly.
You know, I think even the bones are affected by autoimmunity. I think there's an autoimmune component to osteoporosis. So if you may say, well, let's think of something that's not affected. You know, hair is certainly affected by autoimmunity. You lose your hair, you get eye diseases that are autoimmune. You could have autoimmune
arthritis,
brain conditions, many inflammatory brain conditions. Certainly, multiple sclerosis is an example of that. And you know, just think of any part of your body.
Would you characterize ITP as simply low platelets or that they're being destroyed? Because low platelets are also associated with food allergy.
Well, there are some cases where, and I've read of them, where one case that in particular I've read of, I did not preside over this patient, but a patient was sensitive to sesame, and upon eliminating sesame, her platelets returned to normal.
Ah.
So it's worth checking to see if there's a food intolerance, and it's definitely worth cleaning up the diet.
Yes.
And however, this condition often ends up requiring medication, steroid medication, or now they have specific medication that helps the platelets. I think one of the medications is called Agrinox. Also, they may have newer medications now. Also, removing the spleen is a fix for this.
Wow.
And there's actually the vast majority of people walking around without a spleen in this country, it used to be most of them had injuries, bullet wounds to the abdomen or car accidents. Car accidents are notorious for rupturing the spleen because even if you're restrained and you go into the bag there,
the airbag,
you can have such a deceleration industry that the spleen, which is fragile, shatters and you can't sew it back together. It's like trying to sew together a wet paper bag. So they take out the spleen, a lot of people. But the vast majority of people without a spleen these days, they do fine. And they get it because of ITP.
Wow.
So I got to say that there is no magic supplement program for this.
Check for gluten sensitivity, gluten, dairy,
yes.
Again, the usual suspects in autoimmunity,
a
more paleolithic type diet. Always look for food allergies, intolerances. This is also very, very important.
That is a mainstay of the work that we do here.
Okay. Next. This comes from Joe. Hello, Dr. Hoffman. This hopefully will be a question of potentially broad enough listener interest that you might use it on a future podcast. Well, here we are. My father-in-law dealt with a bout of colon cancer 5 years ago. After surgery, there was a course of preventive chemotherapy to reduce risk of spread to other organs. Regrettably, he's just been diagnosed with a tumor in the lung and through a needle biopsy has been identified as being returning colon cancer cells.
Metastatic colon cancer.
Yeah.
Okay.
The planned course of action now is to shrink the tumor with chemotherapy. Given all of that, my question is about the best way post-surgery to improve his chances that there will not be another ancillary spread beyond the lung or even recurrence in this lung. More specifically, there has been a rage lately in the promotion of what is being referred to as the Greek test or the Greek blood test.
Okay, so let's talk about that. The Greek blood test is a test used by some holistic doctors, not yours truly. I don't use this test, but some of my colleagues send blood. Actually, they send tumor samples, and possibly you can get this from blood, but I think you actually need a tumor sample. And the tumor is analyzed for its receptivity to various types of chemo, or perhaps even natural therapies. So they screen the tumor against a variety of things. Now, this actually is similar to what you do when somebody has a cough and they're coughing up greenish mucus, and you don't know what antibiotic to give them. So you take a sputum sample and you plate it out, and then you send it to the lab for what's called culture and sensitivity. Mm-hmm. You do this with a urine sample if there's a urinary tract infection. And the sensitivity tells you which antibiotic is most likely to succeed. This is an idea that's been around in cancer for a really long time. It has been of some questionable efficacy. Because cancer is not quite as simple as a bacterial infection, but because what works in the test tube doesn't necessarily work in the body.
That's true.
So you could kill a cancer cell with Clorox, you know, but it doesn't mean you should drink Clorox if you have cancer and your cancer is going to go away. That's in your body and it's not in a test tube. So the Greek test, that's one approach. This is actually an approach that is being done now by a lot of mainstream, very advanced cancer centers. This is called personalized medicine mm-hmm. in cancer. So what? It's not a one-size-fits-all. It's not like, okay, for this cancer, you give this. It's like, for your cancer, with certain characteristics and certain genetic markers, they do very fancy analysis now on cancer. They don't just go, okay, you have lung cancer. They go, you have lung cancer, and it's highly differentiated. It's not differentiated. It has this DNA mutation, that DNA mutation. More and more, they're saying, okay, it's more likely you'll respond to this or that or the other agent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a good idea. That's the way it's going to go, because a shotgun therapy where, you know, let's blast away and see if it works, you know, the patient is weakened and the cancer may not be cured. So that's what I think of the Greek test. But in terms of this person, you know, the treatment is initially going to make the cancer go away. But a cancer that's already spread from the colon in the lungs is a very dangerous type of cancer. And the chemo is unlikely to cure it. The idea behind the chemo is not even necessarily to cure it. If they're honest about it, it's palliative. It's going to slow the cancer, give the patient additional months or years of life, but the mm-hmm. cancer is likely to come back. So with a patient like this, we see a lot of patients like this. You know, they say, well, they tell me they're done with me. My cancer is gone. What can I do? So we do the whole here at the Hoffman Center, cancer treatment, where it involves diet, and you can talk a little bit about that, but also a key element of is intravenous vitamin C.
Yes.
Now, I've written an article, and we've done podcasts on the subject of intravenous vitamin C, and I'm not here to say that it's a cancer cure, but it is very helpful at keeping cancer at bay. It can be administered while you're getting chemo or after you get chemo. It's compatible,
mm-hmm.
and it is quite effective at slowing the recurrence of cancer or making cancer shrink.
Yes. Making it more like a chronic condition and
yes.
not something that's going to take you out.
Right,
as
exactly.
Fast.
So let's talk about the diet component for this guy, because, you know, the different, you know, we have different ideas about colon cancer prevention. You know, if you mm-hmm. want to, you think you might have a family history of colon cancer, there's certain things you can take to prevent it. That's a different subject. Vitamin D, for example, and probiotics seem to help mm-hmm. keep the balance in the intestinal tract. And
that ratio of omega-3 to omega-6 fatty acids is very, very important. I've known that since Dr. Otto Warburg in the 1920s. This actually sets the stage. When you have a ratio of too much omega-6 to 3, like 20 to 1, 19 to 1 in the standard American diet, that could set the stage for a cancer to grow. Cleaning up the diet, absolutely, getting rid of all processed food. Dairy is a big question mark in cancer because dairy has a lot of insulin-like growth factor. These growth factors are very good for a growing infant, but what is it growing in us?
Or a growing infant cow, which
exactly.
quadruples in size in a few
yeah.
weeks. I mean, they're very yeah. potent growth factors.
Yes.
And that's actually, so we want to curtail mm-hmm. IGF, insulin-like growth factor.
Absolutely.
And
we
then they could actually add mm-hmm. bovine growth factors to make the cow make more
terrible.
Milk. That's terrible.
Terrible. Listen, we as human beings don't need dairy. Once we're weaned from our mother's breast, that should be that.
Right.
So
carbohydrate restrictions, big
carbohydrate time. Restriction, big time, because cancer loves sugar, including your blood sugar. You want to get yourself more into lipolysis, ketosis. This can also be helpful. That also is in line with that researcher we were talking about earlier about caloric restriction,
right.
The benefits of caloric restriction as well.
Now, I'm not going to go into detail on this because I hate answering cancer questions on the air or in a perfunctory way, because I think each cancer patient is very different. And
yes.
I think, you know, it's one, you go to your oncologist and you spend hours and hours discussing and they think about it and you spend oodles and oodles of money, often insurance covers it, but that's not the point. And then you call into a health show and you say, what shall I take for advanced metastatic colon yeah. cancer? Can you give me a tip? Or you go to, worse yet, you go to a counter in a health food store and you say, what can I take for cancer? And it's very individual,
yes.
and it has to be individualized. But among the things that are going to be great for cancer, we like Empower,
mm-hmm.
which is AHCC, used in virtually every cancer patient in Japan gets AHCC.
Yeah.
But high dose, they get 6 pills a day. And it's actually covered under the National Health Insurance of Japan.
I think even in Germany.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that
well.
Immune enhancers, we might also use a thymic extract. What's
mm-hmm.
our product called?
It's thymic extract.
ProBoost.
Yeah,
which boosts the thymus mm-hmm. because after chemo, your immune system is suppressed. We will use
melatonin.
Melatonin, high dose melatonin.
High dose melatonin.
20 milligram melatonin.
20 milligram.
Yeah.
Not the amount to sleep, which is a 3 or 5 milligram dose. But a 20 milligram every night.
And then a phytonutrient cocktail of things that suppress cancer, such as even resveratrol has anti-cancer
mm-hmm.
effects. More specifically, green tea, sulforaphane glucosinolate, which is
yeah.
in Bracomax.
Phytoguard.
Phytoguard.
As well.
By the way, the products that we're mentioning, they sound esoteric, but you can look them up at drhoffman.com, click on the store, and we make them available not just to our patients, but also to our listeners. But, you know, I think if you have cancer, and particularly an involved type of cancer, it behooves you to have a consultation with a nutritionally oriented practitioner who gets cancer,
yeah.
who understands cancer, because cancer is a very specific field. Oncology is complicated. And you have to stay abreast of what the conventional treatments are because
that's true.
You want to make sure that you don't compromise the effectiveness of the conventional treatments with the supplements you take.
Correct. There are certain supplements that don't go well with certain chemotherapies, and a nutritional practitioner is going to know what that is,
right.
and not just give you the arsenal of.
And the other thing, what drives me nuts is that many oncologists say to the patients who have cancer, they say, look, you know, don't take a lot of stuff. That's, you know, all those supplements, we're unsure of what they do.
Not even curcumin?
No, not even curcumin.
Not even curcumin.
Which is so important.
Yeah.
So we know that even when you get radiation, it actually helps to reduce the damage associated
yeah.
with radiation. It helps to potentiate chemotherapy. It's a great supplement for cancer. But they will say this. They'll say, well, if you want, you can take a Centrum or multivitamin, one-a-day multivitamin. Those are the worst quality vitamins.
Absolutely.
They contain the most synthetic mm-hmm. types of
vitamins. And aluminum.
And lots
aluminum
of additives.
Aluminum color lakes,
but
yeah.
The problem is they contain a little bit of everything. And cancer is rapidly growing in the body. So, in effect, you want to selectively nourish the body, but also selectively starve the cancer. So you don't want to give like a shotgun of lots of B vitamins and stuff like
mm-hmm.
that might actually stimulate the growth of the cancer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Things
yeah.
like NT factor are helpful for energy. For post-chemo fatigue, we want to use carnitine or
mm-hmm.
acetyl-L-carnitine. For patients who don't have hormonal cancers, they could use DHEA. DHEA will help with energy because fatigue is such a problem after
yeah.
chemo.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many opportunities here. I don't even know where to start.
Yeah, and none of these supplements are going to take the place of a good diet. The diet absolutely needs to be cleaned up, and don't let them feed you ice cream during your chemotherapy. If you're getting mouth sores, please don't eat
right.
any sugar laden food.
You know, it's kind of like
it's like, oh, go
kid,
have some ice cream.
No,
here's a fruit pop.
It's a primitive thing. It's like, did you ever get your tonsils out?
Yes,
we all got our tonsils. I got my
yeah.
tonsils out.
Mine's growing back.
The only advantage, well, that's good. That's good.
I don't know.
The only advantage of getting your tonsils out is they promise you can eat as much ice cream as you want.
Oh, and I did. Did you?
Oh, sure. Because it's cooling and it's delicious, uh-huh. and you're in pain and you're uncomfortable. So
yeah.
it's like, so this is made like a primitive throwback to this like. Childlike state where they say, well, you have cancer and the chemo is going to be horrible, but you get to eat as much ice cream as you want.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, okay, but is that going to be great for your cancer?
No.
I don't know.
No.
You know. Anyway, so that's, I think, a pretty good list of questions. I know we have several more. Let's remind our listeners that the way to send us questions is email us to radioprogram@AOL.com. That's radioprogram@AOL.com. And we will endeavor each week to answer as many of your questions as we can. Not all questions, remind you, are suitable for answering here on the podcast. Because if you have a very, very complex medical problem and you want us to figure it out, maybe
you need to come see us.
Yeah, right. Good point. I mean, it's like, you know, we can't, you know, it's like we're not going to solve it on the air for you. And also the issues have to be of sufficient general interest that we want to share with our listening audience. So a reminder, we had some great podcasts this week. We had one on, this is mind-blowing, The Scoop on Poop. We talked to an expert on fecal transplantation. This was an amazing podcast because as yucky as it sounds, there's tremendous potential for healing in conditions like ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, refractory C. difficile diarrhea, but also even in diabetes, weight loss. This field is going to explode.
Might be the magic bullet.
Yeah, it's amazing. Caveat, please don't try this at home. It's not ready for prime time. It's not a DIY therapy. But that was a great podcast. We also talked about olive oil, mm-hmm. and I talked to a great guest, and it's up there on our podcast roster. T.J. Robinson, you call him the Olive Oil Hunter, and he goes all over the world trying to find the best harvests of olive oil. He's very dedicated, and he actually pointed out something very interesting. He says that the vast majority of commercial olive oil doesn't have any valuable polyphenols.
That's
true. So polyphenols are gone if they sit around too long, or if they're processed wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it turns out that green olives are the ones that have the most polyphenols, and you can actually, if you let the olive stay in the tree longer, you'll get more oil, which is a more productive harvest,
mm-hmm.
but it'll destroy the polyphenols.
Yeah.
And a lot of Americans have an uneducated palate because the polyphenols are actually a little peppery and a little bitter. So some people say, oh, this olive oil is too strong for me. Then they go for the refined olive oil.
Exactly.
No value.
Which is terrible because they don't like that fruity flavor necessarily, and they go for the refined stuff, which has very little flavor. But you don't want that. It's been bleached. It's been deodorized. That's part of the refining process for a lot of our oils. So
go back and listen to that podcast. Yeah. That's a key podcast. Our podcast, we're splitting them into two parts, part one and part two this week, with T.J. Robinson on the subject of olive oil. And that just about wraps it up for this week's edition of Intelligent Medicine. Thanks for joining us, Layla.
Thanks, Dr. Hoffman.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. This is Intelligent Medicine.